Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hello, Connecting Vets listeners. This is Caitlin Kenny, a producer with ConnectingVets.com. For Women's History Month, I spoke with Lori Manning, Director of Government Relations with the Service Women's Action Network and a retired Navy captain, about 11 military women who made history. So, Lori, your first woman, who is she?
Her name is Margaret Corbin, and she was not on active duty the way we think of active duty today. She fought in the American Revolution. We weren't conscripting women back then, or men either, for that matter. They were all volunteers. And she was also the first woman ever awarded a military pension by Congress for wounds incurred in military service during battle. And the battle she was in was the Battle of Fort Washington. And what happened is she accompanied her husband to camp. He was a cannoneer, and when he was mortally wounded, she took over his cannon, and that's how she was wounded, although she survived. So that's certainly combat.
Right. I feel like women's history in combat has been with American history since the very beginning.
Yeah. Women have been in battle in U.S. history even before we were a country. There were women who fought in the French and Indian War, which in Europe they call the Seven Years' War. So women have been involved throughout our history in the fight.
And your number two is a very well-known woman.
Yes, it is. And again, since this was during the Civil War, she's not officially considered on active duty, although she did a lot more than many of the men who are on active duty. And that's, of course, Harriet Tubman, who was born into slavery. And as somebody who navigated people through the Underground Railroad, she developed exceedingly good scouting skills. In fact, if she was doing today what she did in the Civil War, she'd be a Navy SEAL. She also was a spy and a nurse. So she had many qualities. And I wish they had awarded her a Medal of Honor. She's one I would recommend for that. She worked for the Army of the North, of course, throughout the Civil War in a number of capacities. And she was invaluable on bringing back intelligence of what was going on in the South, where she knew all the highways and byways from her time on the Underground Railroad.
And I read somewhere that she was also the first woman to lead an armed expedition during the war.
That's possible. I hadn't heard that, but it's certainly possible. She certainly did lead them, and I wouldn't surprise me the least to hear that she was the first.
Mm. And your next one?
My third one is Cathay Williams, who, under the name of William Cathay, served as a Buffalo Soldier. Now, the Buffalo Soldiers were an all-African-American, I don't know if they were a battalion or a squad or a platoon, but they were a group of all-African-American soldiers that did a lot of work with the Army or were in the Army in the post-Civil War era as we began to go west. And Cathay Williams disguised herself as a male and served for 2 years before she fell sick. And it was when she got sick that it was noticed, she's a woman. And that was the end of her time in the service. But 2 years is good.
Mm. And there were actually quite a few women in American history who disguised themselves as men in order to serve.
There certainly were. She's the only known woman who served as a Buffalo Soldier. There may have been others that somehow managed to keep their disguise, but she's the only one that we know actually was a woman.
Mm. And your next one brings us up to World War II.
Yes, and that is Colonel Ruby Bradley. She was the senior nurse in the Philippines at the time the Japanese invaded. She survived the Bataan Death March and then spent 3 years as a Japanese prisoner of war in the Philippines, and was the leader of all the women nurses. There were 80-some of them that were captured in Philippines. And many people don't know that there was a party like that, a large party of women nurses, mostly Army and some Navy nurses, who were captured by the Japanese and spent time in the POW camps. And some of them died there. But Ruby Bradley was their leader, and she is one of the most decorated women in U.S. military history. And after the POWs were liberated, she remained in the Army and went back and served in the combat zone in the Korean War during the early 50s, and was again decorated for heroism there. Mostly it involved making sure a military hospital that was about to be overrun by the Chinese Army, which did some fighting in Korea, and she made sure every last patient, most of the wounded male soldiers, was evacuated before she herself left. And she got out of there with just minutes to spare before the arriving troops overran the place. So, yeah, she's one that I hope we never forget about.
Wow, incredible. And the next one, number five, she's also served during World War II.
She did. Her name is Mary Halloran. She was known as the Little Colonel. She ended up as a colonel, and she was the first director of what came to be known as the Women's Army Corps. She was less than 5 feet tall. Most people don't realize that after World War II ended, there were a lot of people, both in the military and in Congress, that thought it was time for every woman who had served during World War II to get out of the military and just go home. And Colonel Halloran, as well as people like General Eisenhower, General Marshall, and some of the Navy people, thought it would be best to keep a cadre of women on active duty, which other than the nurses had never been done before in the U.S. And this was because it was 1947-48. The Soviet Union was beginning to expand into Eastern Europe, and countries were falling behind the Iron Curtain. And it was felt that we might be back at war sooner than we had ever saw. So Congress passed a bill called the Women's Armed Services Integration Act, or maybe it was the Women's Armed Forces Integration Act, in 1948, which allowed a small cadre of women to remain on active duty. And Colonel Halloran, if you go back and read the congressional record, you'll see her going back and forth with the members of Congress on both the Senate and the House side as they actually wrote the legislation. That's how it used to be done in the old days before it got into the kabuki sort of hearings we have now. And when you look at that legislation, it seems quaint, but it was revolutionary for its time, and Colonel Halloran gets most of the credit for it.
Amazing. And it says here that this legislation was pretty much the first step for women to really become involved later with ground combat officially.
Yes. The way I view it is, starting in 1948 with that legislation, which allowed women officers and enlisted women to be part of the regular peacetime armed forces, was the first step in a journey that's taken getting on, well, 70 years this year, to the point where women are now entering ground combat units, where everything is open to them. It's been one long, continuous journey with a lot of male and female heroes in it. And we all stand, no matter when we came into the military, we all stand on the shoulders of people, those who served in earlier wars, Colonel Halloran, and right up to the present day.
And your next military woman, she has really, looks like, influenced how women serve even up to today. She really made some milestones.
Yes. This is Major General Jean Holm. Again, she joined what was then the Army Air Corps, and later evolved into the Air Force during World War II, as an enlisted woman, became an officer. And she eventually rose in the 70s to become director of the women in the Air Force. The women were still run by somebody who was considered their head person in those days. And it was Jean Holm as the era of, this is the time when we're looking at ERA, who began to bring a lot of that into the military. There were the Navy and the Army also had women directors at the time, but they were more old fashioned and were afraid of rocking the boat by insisting that some of the changes that Jean led ought to be made. Among them in the 70s was the opening of RTC, both Navy and Army and Air Force, or ROTC units to women. The ability for women to stay on active duty after they got pregnant or even married somebody who had a child from a previous marriage who spent more than 30 days with the family. She made what turned out to be the winning argument with some fence-sitting Congress people that opened the service academies to women. And what she did was the argument used to be, we can't send women to the academies because that's where combat leaders come from. Well, she got the statistics back over years to prove that an awful lot of the male graduates who got out of the academies, particularly the Air Force Academy, never ever went near a combat job. They were in MOSs that were open to women. And that was one of the key arguments that pushed a few remaining votes needed to make that big change. And she was involved in many, many other things. You know, they're not the sort of thing you get a military combat decoration for, but it was combat in its own way. Because the 70s is the decade in which women went from being seen as auxiliaries to the men. In other words, the men get all the pickings, and the women, you can have the military jobs that are left, into, particularly with the opening of the service academies, to full and equal members of the military in their own right. And Jean Holm led that. After she retired, she wrote what is still one of the best books on the history of women in the military, which is called Women in the Military, an Unfinished Revolution. So not only did she lead the revolution, she became the historian of it after she retired.
Huge, huge changes for women in their ability to serve.
Another big change, and this one was led by, an Air Force woman. It was a Supreme Court case called Frontier versus Richardson, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg happened to be Frontier's lawyer for this and did the arguing in front of the Supreme Court. When women were allowed to remain on active duty, they could not get dependent benefits for their husbands unless they could prove the husband was 50% dependent on the wife for his support, and that dependence could not result from unemployment. It had to be something like he was a wounded veteran and couldn't work, not that he didn't work. And that Supreme Court case equalized when we won it, and it equalized the dependent benefits for both men and women so that everybody's spouse and everybody's children were able to have those benefits like commissary cards and health care and those sorts of things. In the 50s and 60s, women's husbands did not get them, and their children didn't get them because the minute a child entered the picture, they were bounced out.
Wow. It's incredible how military women were really making changes all the way up to the Supreme Court.
Yes, they were, and that's why I say this was a 70-year journey. You know, most of us came in somewhere along that route, be it in the 50s, the 60s, the 80s, the aughties, or just in the past 10 years. But there were changes going on at every point along the way, and I don't want some of the women who were involved in those changes to be forgotten. It's not a new revolution. It's been going on for 70 years.
Mm-hmm. And your next woman, she has gotten some news recently. I think she's been in the news. She's made some accomplishments that's been getting recognition.
You mean Grace Hopper?
Yes, Grace Hopper. I think there was a
Grace
building named after her recently.
Yes, and there's a Navy ship named after her.
Yes.
USS Grace Hopper. Grace Hopper, again, came into the military during World War II, and she was one of the pioneering geniuses in the whole computer age, particularly with respect to some of the early computer programming languages like Fortran. If she had been a male, she would have been an admiral a whole long time sooner. But they were only allowed to have one woman admiral at a time in the Navy. Two, actually, one nurse corps and one who happened to be a line officer. And so Grace Hopper just never got her promotion until she was in her 70s.
Wow.
When they finally began to allow more than one woman at a time to be a line admiral. She also taught generations of Navy, what we would now call cyber warriors, the basics of computer stuff. She was one of the main developers and teachers of generations of Navy cyber warfare people, even though we didn't call them cyber warfare people at the time. Mm. And as I said, she's one of the few women who have served in the military who have a ship named after them. And she's buried over in Arlington Cemetery, if anybody's over there and would like to see some of the graves of some of these pioneering women. So is Jean Holm. So is Ruby Bradley.
Yes, go visit them.
You could take a whole tour of the cemetery and pay your tribute to them.
Our next woman, she brings us up to Vietnam, too.
Yes, the next one is a Vietnam veteran, Colonel Margareta Kammermeier, known as Greta to most of her friends, I believe. She was an Army nurse who served in Vietnam during the Vietnam War and has a Bronze Star for her service there. After she got out, she was in the Washington National Guard, I believe it was, for years as a nurse. And as a colonel in the Guard, she was selected to go to one of the war colleges, I believe. And when she was going through background investigation, she told the truth that she was gay and was bounced out. But she became one of the premier leaders over the past, well, more than 20 years in the opening of the military to LGBT personnel. We'll see about the T. I guess we don't know that for sure yet, but the LGBT community certainly owes her, and they know they do, a great deal of thanks for her bravery and the sacrifice of her career to fight for them.
Mm. And I did a little bit of research, too, and I saw that her story was actually told in a movie called Serving in Silence with
yes.
Glenn Close?
Glenn Close.
Yes.
Glenn Close plays her there, exactly. And I know that I'm sure it's available on DVD, or you could probably stream it from somewhere and see that.
This is the perfect month to do it, Women's History Month.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the next woman is a little bit more recent.
Yes, that would be Sergeant Leanne Hester, who was one of two women who have been awarded a Silver Star for their service in Iraq or Afghanistan. Sergeant Hester, who is now a civilian, I believe she was a vehicle commander with the 617th Military Police Company. And they came they were ambushed while they were doing convoy operations. She defended her troops and led them, and her bravery was honored with a Silver Star, which is a very rare award for a woman to have.
Mm-hmm.
There may have been a couple given during World War II to Army nurses. Yeah, and there was a second one also who got it, whose name escapes me now. But the only two women have been awarded that since World War II, mm-hmm. and Sergeant Hester is one of them.
The next one was also, she served during Operation Iraqi Freedom, looks like early on in
yes,
the war.
This was Private Lorianne Piesnowa, who's got a hilltop in Arizona named after her, in the Phoenix area. She's a Native American from the Hopi tribe, and she was the first Native American woman to die in combat on foreign soil. Very early on in Operation Iraqi Freedom, and she was in the 507th Mortar Company along with Shoshana Johnson, who was a POW, and
Jessica Lynch,
who was also a POW. Shoshana and Jessica survived. Lori was killed in action, and we need to remember she was the first Native American woman killed in combat for this country.
Yes, it's
very important to remember her memory. And
plus her, you know, her service while she was alive also. I mean, she was over there when most of us were home in our warm beds.
Right. The next woman, she has also achieved the rank of admiral.
Yes, full admiral. Rear Admiral Hopper was a one-star admiral. Michelle Howard made four-star. She was the first woman in the Navy to make to be a four-star admiral. She is an African-American, was in one of the early classes at the Naval Academy, graduated from there, and became a surface warfare officer. She was the first African-American woman to command a Navy ship. And she was also a commander of one of the task forces out with the Somali pirates. The movie with, I think it was Tom Hanks, who played the guy who was captured by the pilot raid. She led the task force that rescued him and later on went on to become the Vice Chief of Naval Operations, which is the second highest job in the Navy. And she just finished up in the past few months serving as Commander Naval Forces Europe and has just very recently retired from the Navy. She's another one that we all ought to be aware of.
Definitely. Wow. You have really taught me a lot about some of the women over the decades, over the years, who've really made history, American history. Lori, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about them.
Well, I'm so glad I had the opportunity to, because I'm one of the evangelical in the sense of wanting these women to be remembered, wanting their contributions to continue to be recognized by the women who have served and the women who are serving and the women who will serve in the future.
That was Lori Manning with the Service Women's Action Network. I'm Caitlin Kenny. Check out more of our reporting on women veterans at connectingvets.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.